Oh, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart.
And I'm Justine Toe.
Well, this time of year, whether you're Christian or not, we are surrounded by reminders of the Christmas story, by stables and mangers and shining stars and shepherds and angels at Christmas school plays and so on. But it seems that more and more people than ever not only doubt the details of the story, but whether the baby at the centre of it all existed at all.
Yeah, in October, BBC News reported that something like 40% of British people don't believe that Jesus was a real person. This is according to the results from a Church of England survey. The poll also found that younger adults, so those under 35, were more likely to believe that Jesus was a fictional character from a book and not a real historical person.
Good grief, Justine. So this Christmas, we're going to go back to basics in the sense of sorting out the fact from the fiction. And with us here, we have John Dixon, our colleague at CPX and historian. And John, he must be feeling like a broken record talking on this subject. But John, good to have you in.
Thanks. It's so boring. But no, I'm glad to be here.
Now, let's talk about this because boring it might be to you, but there are still people who, you know, seriously doubt this story. So what do you make of this survey, first of all, finding that 4 in 10 British people don't believe Jesus existed, and it's especially the case for the younger generation who seem to be prone to the idea that this is a made-up character?
I hardly know what to make of it. I think the reality is it was something like 20% who thought he wasn't real and 20% who didn't know, and then the BBC reported that as 40% don't believe that he was a real person. You know, people stopped reading history a long time ago, and so maybe we're just reaping the fruit of that. Maybe it's a little bit of the rise of the new atheism, where they threw out various comments doubting Jesus' existence. I mean, someone like Richard Dawkins certainly did, even though he always admitted he thought, you know, it likely that Jesus lived. He did say in his book that a serious historical case can be made that Jesus didn't live. And then he would say things along the way like, if Jesus said this, or whoever wrote his script, if he didn't exist. And I think maybe, you know, people have just been left the impression that we don't really know anything about Jesus, and maybe he didn't even live. And after all, the other things at Christmas, like Santa Claus, we know they're not real. Spoiler alert. And so maybe Jesus isn't too.
So it's part of the same category. Now, you mentioned the history. You've written a few books on this topic. Can you kind of talk us through some of this then, that what the things that the historians and the experts in this field have to say about whether Jesus existed or not? And, you know, does it matter whether they're believers or not as they do that?
It's true that out of the thousands of scholarly books written on Jesus, there are probably 4 or 5 in the last century that argue Jesus didn't live. There's one quite recent one written by a guy who has a PhD in ancient history. And so, you know, I mean, it's an argument that can be made. But really, when you're comparing it to the, say, the hundreds and hundreds of books on Jesus written by secular scholars in the last, say, 20 years, to have one book that's a historical book arguing Jesus didn't live is kind of revealing. And the other thing I find revealing is the idea that Jesus didn't exist isn't even raised as a possibility in the secular standard works of ancient history. So I'm talking about the Oxford Classical Dictionary or the Cambridge Ancient History in 14 volumes, or the Cambridge History of Judaism, or the Brill New Pauli, or the Encyclopedia Britannica, and I could go on and on. These are secular statements of scholarship that are meant to represent what most scholars believe about stuff. They all treat Jesus as a real historical character that you can know rather a lot about, even though they don't say everything in the Gospels is true. My point is, there is an overwhelming consensus amongst the secular historians that we know he was a real character. He taught, he gathered disciples together, he crossed the elites of Jerusalem and ended up on a cross.
John, you mentioned the Gospels. Can you give us an insight into how historians treat the Bible? Because you often hear people say, oh, well, you know, you can't count anything that the Bible says because it's biased.
Yeah, well, That's just not how historians approach it. So in a book like the Cambridge History of Judaism in four volumes, which is a sort of, it's the state of the art analysis of everything Jewish from, 500 BC to 400 AD, they will use the Gospels, not for just the Jesus chapter. There is a Jesus chapter. They'll use it for understanding Galilee in the period of the first century. They'll cite the Gospels just because they're texts written in the first century. They're one of the few texts we know were written in the first century that have a Jewish background. And so they're used for kind of political, social history, even without thinking about Jesus. Then the scholars that are experts in Jesus use the Gospels as the primary sources. They also use Paul's letters. They employ archaeology, and there's a couple of non-Christian references to Jesus. But the Gospels are the main focus. They don't treat them with sort of a devotion, a commitment to the Gospels as the Word of God, the way a Christian does, but nor do they come to them with skeptical bias, the way a skeptic wants them to do. They just treat them as a human text from the first century. They've all got a perspective. Every text has a perspective. You take that into account and read them against the backdrop of what we know of first century Judea and Galilee. And to the degree that they really fit as plausible stories within that context, they can be read with a degree of trust.
Now, John, one of the many articles you've written on this topic compares those who claim Jesus didn't exist to anti-vaxxers, those who object to vaccinations today. Why did you make that comparison?
I guess that is a little bit unkind to anti-vaxxers. And I've since found that there are probably a lot more anti-vaxxers than there are Jesus deniers who have relevant degrees anyway. What I mean is it's just not taken seriously by the consensus. So in the medical fraternity, you've got to go a long way to find a doctor who thinks vaccinations are problematic. Because the best articles in the peer-reviewed journals that relate to this overwhelmingly give the impression that vaccination's good for your kids. And every now and then you find someone who says, no, it's not. But they're so on the margins. And so I'm trying to find something that's analogous. Even amongst secular professional historians of the eastern part of the Roman Empire, or even professional historians of the historical Jesus who are secular, those who claim we hardly know anything about Jesus, let alone those who claim he didn't even live, are just such a tiny fringe, and yet they get the airplay. And so an illusion takes place because these highly marginal scholars get some airtime, especially on the web, where anything can be true. You can find an article to endorse anything you want, pretty much. They get more airtime than they really deserve.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. We're talking with John Dixon today about the historical Jesus in the lead up to Christmas. There seems to be a deep-seated distrust of authority going on here. And certainly the church gets caught up in that. Powerful institutions these days, people tend to be very suspicious of them. Now, when it comes to the church and the history of the church and the abuses of power that we've seen across Christian history, isn't it true that some degree of skepticism is at least understandable for people today?
Yes, absolutely. But that's sociology. And you've just got to recognize that in yourself. You're influenced by sociology. And so I think a lot of people do approach this question by saying, I don't trust the church, therefore I don't trust the stuff they say about Jesus. It's all completely made up. But it's worth remembering that all of these documents that we're referring to, every single one of them, the Gospels, the letters of Paul, Josephus, Tacitus, were written long before the church had any power. So they're not documents of power, which you often hear, Constantine became a Christian and made everyone else Christian, and then they wrote the Gospels. And so it reflects the power of the church. But that's a nonsense. These texts were already in place centuries before Constantine. So they're actually texts written out of complete weakness and suffering, not texts written out of power. And so the texts themselves don't need to be distrusted in the way that you might distrust the church because of its history of power. These Gospels predate any power.
John, earlier you mentioned that people don't read history anymore. I'm sure that that grieves you greatly as an historian. But also, do you think stories like this, this claim that Jesus didn't exist, they represent some sort of larger crisis about history itself and how we feel like we can't really know anything about the past anymore because all we have left to us is an official story and, you know, powerful people or institutions have kind of redacted the truth and all we're getting is the version told by the winners?
Yeah, I probably exaggerated that no one studies history. I mean, of course, you know, students go through and they do history up to year 10 or something. And then a few people do ancient history, you know, good on them. They're the truly educated ones. And then
snob.
And then a rarefied chosen few go and do ancient history.
Even bigger snob than I thought.
So it's not true no one does it. But I think the two are kind of related. So it might not be the case that people have come to distrust history and therefore don't study it. The two must go together. That history might as well be another planet for most people. Because if you don't grow up reading, as our forebears did, you know, up until about 200 years ago, everyone who was educated had to read the classics. And so you understood a little about Aristotle, you understood a little about the New Testament, you understood a little about Cicero and Seneca, and you read stuff. And so history itself wasn't another planet. It was just stuff that was really old. And you were familiar enough with it and knew it as a real place. But once you stop reading that and someone says, oh, Seneca once said, Seneca might as well be the Hobbit, as far as, you know, most people think. Because you would never hear him. You would never have read him. He doesn't feel like a real character, even though he was certainly a real character. And then people approach the Gospels like that and probably amped up a little bit because of this issue we discussed before. People don't trust the church, and so it is tied into a power narrative.
We've established then that Jesus did exist. If he existed, he was born. At Christmas, we remember the birth. But what does it really mean today for someone to remember Christ's birth? Why is this still significant?
The name Matthew's Gospel gives Jesus is a name he never actually went by, but it's kind of a theological tag, is Emmanuel, God with us. And in the end, that's the extraordinary thing about Christmas. If the theological claims of the Gospels are correct, this is God in our midst, in the dirt and grime, and ultimately the blood, sweat and nails of Easter, that God has come close. He is with us, Emmanuel.
And John, if you put your professional historian's hat aside, then what does the Christmas story mean for you personally?
Probably the same thing. I mean, I'm utterly convinced that there is a God behind the universe. I think the philosophical arguments for a timeless, immaterial mind that is the cause of the universe and sustaining power of the universe are very good, okay? But you can't know anything about that incorporeal, eternal mind unless that mind discloses itself. It's all guesswork. Christmas says God has come close, Emmanuel, he is with us. And so I get to have front row seats of God in conversation with people, tenderly connecting with people, and ultimately giving himself for people. That is, for me, the meaning of my whole faith.
Thanks, John. That's Emmanuel, God with us, then, but also still today.
Yeah, Simon, and considering the state of the world today, this story still matters for us, right?
Yeah, I think it still really matters to many of us. And my view is that we need this story. The Christmas story, the sort of the baby in the manger, tells us that human beings really matter. I can't think of a greater affirmation of the value of human life than the idea that God himself becomes a human person, becomes a baby. He doesn't stay aloof from the human drama. But the second aspect of this is that this story tells us that we need that help. I think we all know this, right? We all know this sort of sense that we have, you know, life's imperfect, we're imperfect, we sense it deeply. If we're asked to look just within ourselves for that answer, many of us feel like we're going to come up short. We need something from beyond ourselves. This story keeps telling us that help is available. That's a grand claim and still is the magic for me of Christmas.
And it's good to be reminded of that at Christmas time each year. Well, that's our program for 2015. We hope you've enjoyed the journey with us and we wish you a very Merry Christmas. We'll see you next year.